Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Okay, Mr. Cruz. Before you can play on this team, you owe me 2,500 push-ups and 1,000 suicides. Oh, and they must be completed by Friday.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Sports Flicks, our sports-themed spinoff slash excuse to do non-chick flicks. This excuse is getting thinner and thinner as the show continues. But I'm John.
I'm Sammy.
And I'm Joseph.
All right.
Oh my gosh!
This week, do what?
I said, "Oh my gosh, we're all here."
We were all three here last time when we did Weird Science.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was only partially there, let's be honest.
That's fair. And this week, I'm only partially here. Going to warn everyone up front. So it's up to Joseph to carry this week's episode.
Oh, why do y'all got to put it on me?
Fine. Sammy, will you pick up his slack?
You know, I mean, I guess I am the only woman, so I'm used to it.
Well, and this week, it's actually your pick, and you're having us... last time we talked football, this week we're talking basketball with Coach Carter, a movie that is not at all Hoosiers. Not at all. Not at all.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not very sure.
Hey, question for you, John. Is it Hoosiers?
It's a little Hoosiers. It's a little Hoosiers. So why don't we get into the trailer, and then we will talk about a movie that is possibly Hoosiers and possibly not Hoosiers.
What? On the streets of Richmond, they fought to get by.
Yo, where you going? Throw some money, man.
Struggled to get out.
Doing good, bro.
And if they had anything left, they brought it to the court.
Your boys don't need practice. They need prison.
Good afternoon, young men.
Are you some preacher, man? Because God ain't going to do you no good in this neighborhood.
Leave the gym.
I ain't scared of nobody, because I'll lay you out.
I don't think so.
Teachers ain't supposed to touch students.
I'm not a teacher. I'm the new basketball coach.
Now they have a choice.
In Richmond, you're 80% more likely to go to prison than college.
This contract states that you will maintain a 2.3 grade point average, and you will wear ties on game day.
Between surviving alone.
This is basketball, man.
These boys are student athletes. Student comes first.
Come on, come on, come on, come on.
And standing together.
If one man struggles, the entire team struggles.
You have an incredible gift up here. Do you realize what an opportunity that is for you to get out of here?
All you gotta do is have the drink.
Cause I just bought that big white crib right there. My wife Beyonce barbecue with her G-strings on.
I said dream, not hallucinate.
Gentlemen, we have six players failing at least one class. We have failed each other.
Put a lock on the gym and force them to meet you in the library.
Coach Carter has taken the lockout to the next level by canceling last night's game, making it their first loss of the season.
Coach thinks I can play college ball. I'm gonna do that and raise a baby.
What are you saying? You want out?
I see no changes.
Basketball's the only thing that these boys have got. Now, are we gonna let Carter come in here and take that away from them?
You're gonna get through this.
Paramount Pictures and MTV Films present...
What do I gotta do to play,
Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it.
When Claire triumphs, we all triumph, right? Woo!
We're gonna finish what you started, sir.
Samuel L. Jackson, Rob Brown, Ashanti.
I came to coach basketball players and you became students. I came to teach boys and you became men.
This is our time!
Coach Carter.
Time for us as a people to start making some change.
All right, Coach Carter, starring Samuel L. Jackson, Rob Brown, Robert Richard, Rick Gonzalez, Channing Tatum, Ashanti, and like 5 minutes. And directed by Thomas Carter, no relation. So, by the way, in the Wikipedia article, it literally says, no relation.
Just in case anybody was...
Yes. So let's go around the room. Joseph, Sammy, when was the first time you watched Coach Carter?
I'm really curious to hear what Sammy has to say.
Okay, well, I'll go first. I have a different answer this week than I normally do.
What?
I know. I don't remember.
So it's your old usual answer.
Yeah, I can actually say I did not see this in theaters. I don't have any recollection of seeing this in theaters. I don't know. Remind me, what year did it come out?
2005.
Okay, it's not like you didn't just say that.
actually, I don't think I did. Because I just read it off of the page.
Yeah, I think I probably watched it. I don't know. I guess when it came out on video, I don't know if I rented it or what, but I do remember watching it, and I think I've probably seen it. I don't even know. Like, I've lost count.
Joseph, when did you first see this?
Last week.
Hey, same.
Well, I remember the post lot back when it came out, but for some reason I just never watched it. It wasn't that just for those around to it. Yeah. But I remember seeing just the poster.
Yeah, I just never honestly had an interest in seeing it until we put it on the schedule. I'm just gonna be honest. Like, it was never on that list of, oh, I'm gonna get to that one day.
Yeah, and you know, it's not really one of those types of movies that you seek out. In fact, there's a decent possibility that how I saw it was on television, and I was just like watching it for a few minutes and got hooked.
Was it on MTV? Because this is an MTV movie.
Quite possibly.
Well, so that's how I've discovered a lot of the movies I absolutely love. Youth. It was just on TV one day. I was like, oh, this movie's awesome.
Yeah. Right. Stay tuned. I for a movie that we're eventually gonna do with a surprised guest. That I actually remember how I saw it.
I'm lost and now kind of worried.
Well, you duped me before, and just in this episode, so I'll believe it when I hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a surprise guest who often wears a bow tie.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Whenever we manage to get around to that film.
That's right. We're having a Doctor Who on here. Anyway, so I knew nothing about Coach Carter, the movie, or the man. And honestly, I think it was about halfway through watching the movie that I discovered this was a true story. Because even though I feel like I should have known that, but it just felt so kind of rote, because there are so many of the sports movie cliches in this movie. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm just saying you've got one of two sports movies you're either going to make. You're going to make Rocky, or you're going to make Rocky II. And the difference between the two is Rocky, he doesn't win the match, but he does win, and he went the distance, and he proved that he could do it. And in Rocky II, he just won the match. Oh, spoilers for Rocky and Rocky II. But when you think about most sports movies, those are really the only two outcomes, unless your sports movie is like just super different.
Right, and I'd say most of them probably fall into the Rocky II category.
Yeah, a lot of them do. Like,
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. But it's entertaining.
Well, something I really liked about this, watching it, even though I know it's based on a true story, so it has to be this way, but usually when you have movies like this where they're going into a poor neighborhood, especially in a poor minority neighborhood, it's always usually, well, the white guy or the white woman's going to come fix everything. And it wasn't that. It was refreshing to see that, not see like, oh, how's this white person going to help?
Yeah, the irony of that is, there was a TV series back in late 70s, early 80s called The White Shadow. And why this is important is because Thomas Carter was also involved with that show as well, the director. Oh. No relation. And some of the plot lines in this movie that kind of, you know, had the running time came from The White Shadow.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And one of the big criticisms of The White Shadow, as of, you know, many of, you know, these pop culture, is it does lay very heavily into the white savior complex. Entertainment.
Yeah, especially, I agree. I think that was kind of a it was unique, and it fit really well. I, you know, Samuel L. Jackson a lot of times is playing Samuel L. Jackson, but I mean, it works. It's kind of the same way that
I don't want to insult Samuel L. Jackson. I do think Kevin Costner is a little bit better of an actor.
Oh,
but,
yeah, I agree.
But I get your point. But I'm not just saying that because he was in our hometown recently.
But yeah, he really does work for this movie really well. Samuel Jackson knows how to... Well, I wouldn't... Because he does whatever comes across his desk. But he tends to get roles that he can play very well for the most part.
Yeah, well, there are the ones that you can tell he's putting a little bit more of his all into it because he believes in it, and then versus the paycheck movie. He's kind of similar to Mark Wahlberg in that respect. Like he's obviously going to try harder in a Spike or, you know, Quentin movie than he is whoever directed The Man. But, you know... He does, you know, occasionally do the, I am an actor and I can do this, and I'm going to show you that I can do this. And I kind of think this is that movie. Like, this is kind of his, you know, I keep making the Hoosiers comparison, but I also want to put in like a little bit of Lean on Me and a little bit of Won't Back Down. Like, if that, mm-hmm. if those three hooked up and had a love child, it's this movie.
Yeah. I was having flashbacks of Went Back Down when we were watching this, when I was watching this.
Well, okay. Let me, to Joseph's point, I also like, I don't think that, well, first of all, it's based on a true story. So that I think affects casting to some degree, but I don't think that this would have worked as well, or he would have been able to have the impact he did if he wasn't somebody who came from the community, you know, if he wasn't someone who had grown up there, who's like, he points out, whose name was on the wall in the gym, who went to the school, who went through the same circumstances they did. Like, if this was some white guy coming from the suburbs, they're going to have a much tougher time relating to that
group. Well, yeah, it would be like Dangerous Minds again, except instead of, you know, teaching poetry, it's about teaching basketball. And I think Sam is very good in this role. I think I was thinking like who else could play the role, and the only person I could think of, and he's kind of already played this character, a different variation of it, and that's Denzel.
That's where I thought you were going.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going too, because I was like, yeah, he's going to play Denzel. Just because of both Titans.
Yeah, it's just like, Denzel can play a coach because he has.
Central kind of brought it up. Let me ask you, without giving away your feelings on the film, what is your preference as far as, like, I feel like this fits in a kind of subgenre with Freedom Riders, Won't Back Down, Lean on Me, To Serve with Love, all of those type of films. But there's also like a subgenre of that that is specifically sports related. So do you have a preference? Do you think one's done better than the other?
I do. I have a slight preference, and this may surprise you, for the sports film. But also, real quick, five cool points for name checking to start with love. But I don't mind.
You can thank my mom for other... that.
Okay. But then 5 points to your mom. But I don't mind the other ones so much. It's just, I've seen Lean on Me. I've seen Dangerous Minds. I've seen Won't Back Down. I've seen that movie. And the same criticism could be levied against sports movies. It's just, I don't know. To me, and this is probably horrible to say, I have more investment in the stakes of, are they going to win the game versus are they going to pass the test?
Right.
I think it's a better
vehicle because like they already have this thing built in that is, I think, so incredibly useful for kids in teaching them life skills, which is team sports. Yeah. And so
or some kind of elective, because I think you can tell the same story about band kids or theater kids or probably art students, but then you risk, you know, getting into pretentious territory.
That's true.
Yeah, I think the best art slash theater kid movie we're ever going to see is Rushmore, and he's still. But the joke of that movie is he is a pretentious fuckwit. Also, Rushmore is the Wes Anderson movie that you two might actually like.
Yeah, that's one I've always dabbled in wanting to try to watch, but I never have.
Yeah, it's before he became your barista's favorite director, to quote.
It's the start of
that. Yeah.
So when did y'all first... I'm trying to think of how to ask this question. What was y'all's first impression of the team itself, his introduction to them? Like, I guess, what was your first... Where did you think this movie was headed when he first meets the team and they have the entire introduction to, you know, the setting and what this is going to be about?
Let's introduce a new drinking game called Take a Shot Every Time John Says Hoosiers. But having recently watched Hoosiers, I was seeing, oh, there's a new coach in town in a school where basketball is life, and he's going to start doing his things his way, and no one's going to like it. Which movie did I describe?
It's true. I kind of felt the same way, where it's like you kind of knew what was going to happen, but it was done so well, I didn't really care.
I was surprised that it did start having the focus on, like, their education, which...
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either.
Yeah, and I know there are schools that, you know, make things a little bit easier on their student-athletes. Joseph and I went to the same high school. I always kind of felt like, and not to slander the coaches you and I were taught by, I always feel that they did put an emphasis on our education as well. Whether or not, you know, it was because they had to, it remains to be seen. But so it always surprises me whenever the focus is like whenever a coach says these kids need to, you know, focus on their grades as well, and everyone acts like that's a novel concept.
Yeah, I was like, what are you talking about? My son's stupid. That's why he's in football.
Right. Or like reasonable expectation.
Mm-hmm. Like, I had a couple of the coaches that they did teach a class, and it was a blow-off class. And I also had the coaches that taught a class, and it was kicking my ass. Thanks, coach that taught me algebra, and also coach that taught me world history. Not world history, but government and economics. It's like, you actually made us learn shit. How dare you?
So let me ask, speaking of I guess we can kind of get into it, the rules of the contract. Did you think that do you think that what he did, the choice he made when he first introduces himself to the team and lays out the terms of the contract he has them all sign, was that reasonable?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
He asked.
And
he was asking them to barely pass.
Yeah. And also barely pass in a manner that made them more eligible for college. How dare he?
Although I do like the deal he made with his son. I thought that was really good because his son played hardball with him. He was just like, well, okay. And he was not somebody.
Yeah.
He wasn't the typical father. He was like, well, no, you're not doing it because I'm your dad. He starts off that. Yeah. He's like, okay, well, this is what he really wants to do, but he's going to work for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. I love that. I thought his interactions with his son were really, really good because it was this film had several separate like subplots.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll get into them, but I thought they were all fairly well done, but I really liked the one with him and his son particularly.
Yeah. I kind of wish the movie had the line that he was going to be harder on his son than the rest of the team, but I also feel like it didn't need to be said.
No, it was.
You got that, but.
No, I got it. That was an understood thing that I think his son kind of expected that.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, that was
The team, because it's like the team had to have the 2.3 and he had to have, what, like a 3.5 or 3.7?
Yes. Uh-huh, 3.7. Well, which, I mean, I understand, obviously, like, he's putting an emphasis on education, and where his son was going was setting him up to go to a really good college.
Yeah. Well, and here we have the stereotype that, you know, because historically these students barely pass, barely graduate, college is out of reach, you know. Like, that's a stereotype now in these movies. It's just like... And by the end of the movie, it's like, yes, we have learned anybody can go to college.
Yeah.
Right. Most of the time, I think that we exist in our little bubbles, right? So we don't have a lot of concept of what other people's lives are like. And films like this are one of the ways that we get to, like, we get an inside look. This is a true story. Now, obviously, they dramatized it. Like, we don't know that these kids really went through these things, but I'm sure they did. I'm sure they pulled real stuff. And I don't know. I think it's a good example of that because for all of those kids, college wasn't a real possibility.
By the way, you got very dangerously close to the explanation of why I love movies so much, but you turned left. I made it about this movie.
Yeah, and obviously, like, I agree with you back to our earlier question. I like the sports aspect of it a little bit better just because it adds something else. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of
it. Adds a ticking clock.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the Freedom Riders and the Lean on Me and all that, but this combines everything I love about that type of film with everything I love with movies about sports. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds.
Well, and, you know, the best sports movies always have something else added to them where it's a lot. It's not just about, are they going to win the big game or the boxing match? It's like, are they going to go to college? Is that quiet, weird girl from the pet store ever going to acknowledge Rocky's there? Insert crickets. But, you know, I think of something like the Mighty Ducks, which is a completely, you know, fictional film. I'm sure someone somewhere in the writing and the production of that movie pulled something from whenever they maybe played Pee Wee. No, I hate to break it to you. But, you know, are you joking or serious?
I need a minute. Guys, I feel like I just found out Santa Claus isn't real.
Have fun doing the rest of the show by yourself.
I'm sorry.
Next week we're doing Sallow.
Oh my god.
Oh, you're gonna have a rough time, Sammy.
And you have to watch the Italian version, not the English translation.
I quit.
So you'll have to stare at the screen for 2 hours. You're going to learn why Joseph hates the word manja. But my point I was making is that even in a fictional film about a sports team, there's still the side stories about what, you know, whatever, you know, in each film. Sometimes it's about brain damage that, you know, is barely acknowledged, but if he gets in one more fight, he's going to, you know, be a vegetable and then gets in multiple more fights. I made this about Rocky again.
That's just going to be another drinking game, I think. Or we'll just add it to bingo.
The drinking game gets suspended for whenever we do Rocky. So we, you know, we have to mention the character names.
Okay, I want to talk about a little bit about some of the other subplots in the film. Like, because obviously, like any other film, some are going to be better than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Whichever one you want to go first. What was your favorite?
I don't have a favorite. I have the one that I thought they handled things the best and things that they handled in a manner that only happens in the movies and not real life. Mr. Cruz, his subplot with his gang member cousin, I thought that story was handled the best. I don't want to say I liked it, because I don't want to sit here and like, the gang story was cool. I don't want to give it that. And then the pregnancy story, they handled it in the only way like a movie would. Like, these are 17, 18 year old kids dealing with a pregnancy and how college is going to affect their lives. And it's like that's not a real teenager, because they would be fucking clueless. They're handling this with the maturity of someone in their mid to late 20s.
I think my favorite was with the father and son aspect. I think I gravitated towards. I agree with John on the other ones, but I don't know. I kind of was interested to see what was going to happen between him and his son, or just because I never thought there was going to be a huge conflict, but I did enjoy that dynamic.
Am I alone in thinking that the subplot about him owning a business in town existed only for the shot of someone throwing a brick through the window?
I kind of...
Yes. I think it was kind of filler. And of all of them, it was probably the weakest. Not that it was bad. Like, it wasn't... They didn't handle it poorly or anything. It was just unnecessary. I tend to agree with you. I think the one with Cruz was handled the best. I don't want to say it was handling the darkest subject matter, because it wasn't really. I mean, all of it, they were all dealing with pretty serious stuff, but I felt like they handled it in the best way possible. And they kind of took one character, right? They took one character to sort of, I feel like, represent the struggle of what everyone was going through, just because it's easier to do it that way. And I thought that was better. They didn't do a bunch of... They did a few subplots, but they didn't do a story for, like, all of the main kids, which I thought was smart. They fixated on one kid.
Not to drag this into a tangent, but whatever happens, happens. Have you seen the movie Patriots Day with Marky Mark?
Oh, yeah.
I have not.
Okay, so it's the story about the Boston Marathon bombing. The character Mark Wahlberg plays is not an actual person that existed, because it's a composite of like five or six different people. So it gave you that one person to focus on throughout the movie to get the, you know, story told. And I kind of like that in that movie, and I like that in this movie as well.
No, I get you, because it really worked for Patriot Day too. And that's what I think Sammy would really like.
She would, because it's from the same director as of Lone Survivor and
Deepwater Horizon,
and Very Bad.
Yeah,
Things.
I definitely want to see it. It's just one of those things that I've got to get to, because I feel like it's one of those ones where you kind of have to be in the mood to watch it.
Yeah, luckily my mood was made by me purchasing a ticket to go see it.
Yeah, that was me too, because I saw it in theater.
Yeah. No, but I totally agree with you. I just think, like, I think that was a really smart creative choice that they made to do it that way, because it's too short of a film, and it would be too easy to screw things up if they did it any other way. So I think they did it smart. My other kind of favorite subplot was I really liked what was going on with him and the principal. Now, obviously, I have things to say about the principal, but...
Well, you need also him to have an adult antagonist as well, and that's the closest they got until all of the parents lost their fucking minds and made him the villain.
You know, as parents tend to.
Yeah. It's almost like parents just don't understand.
I don't know. I don't, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I like but
that, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, I am sitting here all smug after that one.
I do like the reference. Yes.
Reference but I just slaps. Thought that made a lot of sense because they didn't, you know, they didn't make this film purely about basketball. It had this whole other aspect to it, which seamlessly connected to the basketball because, you know, at least how it was portrayed, that was his whole point in taking the coaching position is because he saw how angry these kids were and recognized what a lot of him and his teammates went through and thought, well, I could do something different.
Shall we talk about the white elephant in the room?
Okay.
Go for it.
Channing Tatum. Young Channing Tatum.
Yeah, because this was at the point of his career where I think a lot of people were kind of just like, yeah, he's not going to make it.
Sammy will know the answer to this question. Is this pre or post Step Up, Channing Tatum?
I think it's post.
I think Sammy's ignoring us. Mine happened a little bit later in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, I'm just going to
Oh, yeah. But I am going to say one thing about Channing Tatum. Like, he does good here. I'm not going to, and I'm not here to bury Channing Tatum. I'm actually here to give him a sort of backhanded praise. I think Channing Tatum works best in comedies, but I think he did good here. Like, you know, he's not going to carry home any golden statues for his acting here, but he was fine. He was serviceable. He did his role well.
He did what you have to do in a film like this to take this from being a like mediocre, palatable film to actually being a really well done film, which is make a minor character matter. You know, do a good job with a minor character.
Yeah, he mattered slightly more than the white kid in Freedom Riders.
Right. Yes. I think exactly. Oh, he's more memorable in a lot of ways than that kid, and he had a little bit. He had a little bit more of an impact.
He also did have one of my favorite lines in the movie, which we'll get to later.
Update: it was a year before Step Up. I thought it was after.
Yeah. Oh,
I thought so because I remember seeing him in this film, and then I remember seeing Step Up, right? And that was the first time, like, I knew who he was. That it sort of mattered to me because he was the lead in that film. He carried it. And I think it was probably sometime later in his career that I actually made the connection and remembered that he was in this film. Jump Street?
I think it was Jump Street.
Was Jump Street first?
I think it was Jump Street.
Okay.
Here, I'll check it again.
I like that we now have a fact checker on the show. Where have you been?
Joseph. On the job.
No, but I think he really did do a good job with a fairly minor role, and he did have some of the best lines too. But most of them did, like even down to Worm, which I have a lot of questions about whether or not that was if he was portraying like an actual person whose nickname was Worm or not. But
probably because that's a pretty common nickname.
I don't know what it is, if it's just the writing in this genre of movies, but I find a lot of times that the minor characters do tend to be really well written and generally well acted. Like, other than Channing Tatum and actually his son, who didn't go on to do, like, that actor, I've seen him in other stuff. It's not like obviously he didn't go on to Channing Tatum's level, but he did go on to do other stuff. None of the other characters I have ever seen in anything else.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's only two recognizable faces, or three recognizable faces in this movie, and it's like Sam Jackson, Channing Tatum, and Octavia Spencer, who was still in the supporting character phase of her career.
But one of the best scenes.
I do love the scene where she brings him.
Yes.
Brings her son to the store and is just like,
he's in the car. I think she has my best line, which we'll get to. Yeah.
Okay, update. Same year.
Oh.
21 Jump Street came out in March, and Magic Mike came out in, I think it was July.
Okay, so whichever hit,
it was
whichever
June.
One hit pay-per-view first is the one I saw first. So
it was 21 Jump Street.
I don't know. I slept on 21 Jump Street for a while, so I may have seen Magic Mike first.
You probably did.
Yeah, I said what I said. It had a storyline. It also had Amber Heard.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
Yeah. But moving on.
So, something else I thought was kind of neat about the way that they chose to... this is more about like the way the film was written. And I don't know... I don't really know anything about the writer, but I do think the writer made a lot of good choices. They gave you an actual, like... There was a good amount of focus in this film on his particular coaching style. Like, there was a lot of time spent. I guess I found it kind of unique because a lot of sports movies will focus on this sometimes, but sometimes I feel like they spend a little bit more time focusing on the games and some more of the exciting aspects, where this kind of delved in to, they pinpointed a unique coaching style for him when they chose to have him do this, to use women's names and have different stories of women in his life correlate to his strategy, essentially, and his offensive and defensive playbook. And I just thought that, I don't know, I thought that was a really, really smart creative choice.
I like that too. So if you want to learn about the writers real quick, one of them, he wrote the movie Dreamer, and then he co-wrote this, Real Steel, Kong Store, Skull Island. And he also acts and has been in three beloved Eddie Murphy films, beginning with Norbit. Oh, wait. Academy Award nominee Norbit. And then the other writer, Mark Schwann, he was a television writer. He worked on Sammy's favorite network, the WB or the CW. He created One Tree Hill.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then he had sexual harassment accusations lobbied at him in 2018, ending his career.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, but that also might have been a press time pull quote, so I tend to take it with a grain of salt.
That's cool to know, because we don't always find that out.
Want
to
learn a little bit about the director? Thomas Carter, no relation.
Go for it.
So this guy has a really kind of an interesting career, because he, not only is he a director, but he's also an actor. He was in an episode of MASH. He did a lot of 70s and 80s TV, like Lou Grant. He was in The White Shadow. He was on an episode of Miami Vice. I think he worked on the reboot of Roots. But he's only done like a handful of films as a director, one of which was Swing Kids with a young Christian Bale. He did one of the first films in the Eddie Murphy Sucks Now era called Metro. But yeah, but he's kind of got this interesting career. He also directed the Don King TV movie where Take Your Statue.
Yeah, honestly, for a film that probably, and I'm sure you can answer this, probably did not have a very high budget. I don't know.
$30 million budget, which, you know, it's weird to say that's not a lot of money, but, you know, in these days of, you know, films costing $250 million to make sometimes, yeah, that's low budget.
Right, and I just... it's an example to me of how you don't need a lot of money to make a really good film. And when directors and writers put a lot of thought into what they're doing.
Well, and that's kind of the point that a lot of people were making with the film The Northman that just came out, and also Michael Bay's latest Ambulance. These are kind of like mid-budget films. They're not low-budget indies, but they're not like blockbuster budgets. Like, that kind of film is almost gone these days, where they spent a reasonable amount of money on a film, and, you know, it turned out actually pretty good.
Oh, you know who else made who spent a reasonable amount of money, and that's the only reason it's probably going to do well in theaters this year?
What?
Morbius. They only spent like $75 million on it. So it's going
to... And one day they'll make that money back. And also, they spent $30 million to make this movie, and the box office is 76.7. So even with advertising, it probably entered into the black barely, but they made their money back.
Right, and I think that it just came down to they made really smart choices. I don't think the film was necessarily too long or too short. I think it actually was paced well. It used its time well, and the story, it moved in a way that made sense. Like, it was coherent. For the fact that they were doing multiple plot points, all of it made sense. It didn't feel like it was choppy, like it was jumping from one thing to the next.
Mm-hmm. I think it could have been a little shorter, but other than maybe the stuff with the store, I don't know what else we could trim.
Right. Like, even his transition into the school, which was kind of one of the subplots, I thought made a lot of sense, how the teachers reacted to his request, which still makes no sense to me that they did such a pushback on just providing basic progress reports for his players so that he could actually enforce his contract.
Yeah. Number one, I did roll my eyes whenever that happened. But number two, I can see this being a real thing that a teacher probably said out loud.
I can see that happening, especially in our area.
Question that we sometimes ask, we don't ask it on every episode. What do you think happened next? Like, do you think he continued on to coach the team?
I believe he did. I think there is an answer to this question.
I mean, we have an answer to it.
Yeah, not in my notes, but I think he kept coaching.
I think he did too. If I remember correctly from on the credits where they tell everybody like what they went to go do, I think it said he kept coaching, if I remember correctly.
He coached at that school from 97 to 02, and then he moved on to coaching other places.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And apparently he lives in San Antonio now, so we could go bother him on a weekend.
Yeah, because they always they're always showing a snippet, so it kind of just makes you wonder, were they able to sort of recreate the success he had with his first team? Alrighty, well, if you guys are ready to move into our segments.
I am ready, I am willing, but am I able?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah.
All right, for our first segment, I feel like it's going to be, well... I don't know. This might be an interesting one this week. Did John like the soundtrack?
No, John did not. John wanted to like the soundtrack, and John was happy that it was on Spotify. But all of the good music was in the film, and all of the filler, to quote Metallica in the documentary they made, all the stock was on the soundtrack. So it's just generic hip hop, and I didn't care.
I don't really remember the soundtrack.
Yeah. I did love that in the, I don't know if it was prom or just a school dance, that they played the radio edit of Get Low.
I did that, like that.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that time where the only lyrics we knew were all skeet, 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 because you can't say.
See, what this is said. Like, this is the other film I think of when I hear that song. Mostly, it's The Proposal, but you really can't get Betty White singing "To the Window, to the Wall" out of your head once you've seen it.
But but The Proposal's a PG-13 film. Had it been R, we would have gotten the proper version. Because I don't know about you, but I want to hear Betty White sing "Till the Sweat Drops Down Her Balls." I want to hear that.
Well, I guess we have to watch The Proposal.
We'll add it to the list. I think at this point, with all the things we said we're going to cover, and we'll get to it around 2025.
More like 2028.
Alrighty.
Yeah. It's going to take about a year for Sammy to speak to us again after we do the Caligula episodes.
So. Oh, God. It's not happening. Moving on to Rotten Tomatoes and away from Caligula. So, do you have the Rotten Tomatoes scores?
Yes.
All right.
Go first, I'm guessing.
I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. So... I'm not going to give away how I feel about this movie, but this is a January release, which means it was dumped into theaters, not released. So I'm going to go with maybe a 40.
Okay.
I'm going to go on the higher end and say that there's probably not a lot of reviews, but the critics probably liked it. So I'm going to go with like a 67.
Okay. Well, Sammy was actually closer.
Oh.
It has like about 140 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. And it has a 64%.
Okay.
Not bad. It says, even though it's based on a true story, Coach Carter is pretty formulaic stuff, but it's effective and energetic thanks to a strong central performance from Samuel L. Jackson.
All right. Yeah, that sums it up.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well. So... here's the next question, if y'all can get this right. What do you think the audience score is?
I'm going to go with a 76.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say I don't think it'll be too much higher. Maybe like an 81.
Again, closer. It was at an 85%.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, it was favorably reviewed and pretty well liked, so...
You know who liked this movie?
Who?
Our boy, Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert.
How many stars out of four did he give it? Three. I've already kind of given you a hint.
Three.
Oh, yeah, three. It was three out of four. What's the funniest part of Roger's review is he spends three paragraphs talking about how Samuel L. Jackson turned 50 Cent down to be in 50 Cent's movie. I think three to do this. And the point was he turned it down to do this movie. And Sam even quotes Sam saying that once the rapper made about another five movies or so and earned his chops, he might do a film with him. This film came out in 2005. In 2006, about six Sam Jackson movies later, by the way, he starred in a little movie called Home of the Brave with one Curtis 50 Cent Jackson in 2006. So I guess Fitty didn't take his words, I guess he didn't see it as a diss. So yeah, this movie made me think, as you know, I'm bringing up Roger Ebert reviews every week. I need to do one simply for Joseph and see if there's an Armand White review.
Oh God, is this a segment?
You got to remember the Roger thing is kind of an extension of the Rotten Tomatoes score. So yeah, it is. starting next week, every time there's an Armand White review, John will bring it to the table because it's going to be the most maddening thing we hear, even if we agree with him.
Speaking of semi-new segments, our next one is, does this pass the Bechdel test? Which I feel like, you know, initially you think that it wouldn't, because it's literally a movie about a boys' basketball team. But I'm going to say it does, because I'm pretty sure that all three of those female characters are named and have a conversation with each other other than about men.
All right. So, according to BechdelTest.com, this movie passed, but it does not say how it passed. It got 3 out of 3 of the criteria, but that's all it says.
Oh wow.
So I'm not going to argue with them. This movie somehow passed the Bechdel test.
And if you don't know what the Bechdel test is, go to BechdelTest.com, because we're not explaining it again.
I feel like at this point, if they don't know, and they've been listening with some regularity, which, by the way, our audience is, I just looked at it, 65% female listeners. So, God, I'm hoping our listeners know the Bechdel test.
So, all right. Well, I'm kind of excited to hear this week's best line, worst line from y'all.
Okay, so I got one, and it is a combination of Jason, Damien, and Worm, where Jason says, "Sir, they can cut the chains off the door, but they can't make us play." Damien says, "We decided we're going to finish what you started, sir." And Worm says, "Yeah, so leave us be, coach. We got shit to do, sir." Joseph, you got one?
Well, mine, I think we mentioned it earlier. But it's whenever the mother brings him to the store, and she's like, "I'm going to have to talk to you." Oh, he is in the car. She did deadpan. He's like, "Oh, no, he's here with me. Stay at home."
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite line of the movie. And, of course, anytime Samuel Jackson had a speech in the movie, that was really good.
Sammy, you got...
Yeah, I definitely have a couple. Mine is like an extension of when she brought him to the store, because when they were leaving, as you could hear her leaving, she was like, "Oh, he will." And they leave, and she goes, "I don't know who you think you are." her whole little lecture of him outside the store.
Mm.
I also really loved Cruz's speech, because the first time I ever saw the movie, I had no idea what he was getting at. And I thought that was a really weird question that he kept asking him, "What is your greatest fear?" And I had no idea what he was talking about until he recites it. And I actually remember looking it up after having seen it, because it's a whole, like, it's, yeah. He doesn't even recite the whole thing.
Yeah. I've got a snippet of it here. Our deepest fear is that we are not inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. And there's more to it. It's just like, I have one more line I like, and it's kind of a repeated line, but it's specifically when Channing Tatum's character says it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, "You said we're a team. One person struggles. We all struggle. One person triumphs. We all triumph."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is that I have to say, this is just kind of a
Does anyone have any worst lines?
I honestly don't think I had any, because nothing really stuck out to me in this movie.
I don't have a worst line, but I thought it was a stupid line when they catch him at the high school party and in the pool, and Carter's like, "I end up taking a road trip to the suburbs where I find my drunk ass point guard on top of Daddy's Little Princess," and Wormer says, I was on the bottom, coach. She was on the top. It's like, it's a funny line, but it's kind of a stupid line.
It kind of is, but like you said, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, mine was more of like a moment, and it's not that I hated the line, because I thought it was well done and everything. I was just like, it's one of those things where they said it, and I went, "But that's not true." Which is when he first meets the team, and Cruz is, you know, Cruz gets in his face and he shoves him up against the wall, and he's like, "Teachers can't touch students." He said, "I'm not your teacher, I'm your basketball coach." Still pretty sure you can't put your hands on a student.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Is the one in the library where he quotes to them all of the statistics. Mm-hmm. You know, about how they're more likely to go to prison than to go to college. And I don't know. I just thought that was really well done. And I think my only other favorite one is when he's having that conversation with the teacher, and she tells him that Actually, I think I have two more. There's a lot.
Yeah. Is this the if they fail, we failed?
Well, yeah. Well, where she tells them, you know, that only a certain percentage of the kids are going to graduate. And he was like, well, I think that's the problem. And then when she gets on to him about, you know, basically all the changes he's trying to make and the burden he's putting on the teachers. And mm-hmm. she tells him that his job is to win basketball games. So he should start doing his job. And he goes, then your job is to educate students. I suggest you start doing yours.
Yeah.
I think that was one of my favorites mm-hmm. too. All right. Are we ready to move on to the good, bad, and the ugly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll John, Joseph, what's good?
Okay. We haven't talked about it, but I laughed my ass off. Whatever. He tried to fight someone in the street for spitting on his car. And again, like, nothing specifically like that happened in Hoosiers, but I'm just like, this is still Hoosiers. We are still in Hoosiers territory. Like, we're going to do Hoosiers for surviving sports flicks, and you're going to see what I saw in this film.
Yeah. Joseph?
I forgot about that moment. I did like that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's actually going to get out of the car and beat the shit out of the guy. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything we haven't talked about that I said that we liked, or that I know that I liked, because I've liked most of everything in this movie. It gets a little, it comes with the territory. It gets a little sappy in places, but
mm-hmm.
it kind of comes with the territory of these type of movies. But I do, like I said, I just liked all the dynamics between the coach and all the students. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, and I liked whenever Cruz was trying to prove himself to get back on the team. Also, mm-hmm. Having never run a suicide in my life, I still know. Like, yeah, like I'm like, ugh. And I'm like, you want them to run 1,000 of them? Which made me question, like, do the writers know what a suicide is? Like, the human body can only vomit so much, sirs. I think you're past that limit. But whenever the team, but whenever he gets to Friday and he hadn't met his quota, and the team steps up to fulfill his numbers.
Yeah, that was a really good team.
Yeah,
there. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of this was just the whole education aspect of it. It's so well done, because I do think it's realistic, but it just baffled me the things that were said, the thoughts of the principal initially, even though eventually she does get on his side and she understands where he's coming from, but just the parents in particular when they were having the meeting about whether or not they were going to fire him, and they're asking him the question,
Hoosiers.
And they're talking to him and they're like, and you take them off the basketball court, the one place where they succeed, and you challenge them academically. And he's like, yes. obviously, they're student athletes.
Yeah.
And they need, the most important place for them to succeed is the classroom, especially given the statistics of where they were living and the likelihood of any of them going to college. I don't know. I liked his whole speech that he gave in that, during that board meeting, where he just kind of, it was a nice exposition without it being like, it was a good example of exposition, where they gave a little bit of a backstory to his character
mm-hmm.
and, kind of an explanation for why he was doing what he was doing. I think it made so much sense, because he was right. Basically, what they were telling those kids is that they were above, because of their basketball talent, they were above having to follow the rules of a very, very easy and simple contract. So, why in the world would they follow laws?
Yeah. I also liked the last game they played. You know, just to get into the sports movie cliche, I thought it was well done. And I honestly thought for a second they were going to win.
Yeah, me too. But, it's weird, but I almost like that they didn't. Just yeah. because it kind of made when they came out and the mm-hmm. fact that they told you where they all went and where they went to college, I think yeah. that was kind of I don't know.
Yeah.
It was
the Adrian going the distance / end of Cool Runnings.
All right. Do you have anything bad?
Actually, no. I don't
I really didn't have anything bad in this movie. Like I said before, it gets a little sappy in places, but again, that's to be expected in these type of movies. I didn't think anything. I really didn't have anything negative to say.
The pregnancy storyline. I understand it's the thing that happens in high school sometimes, and I thought it did add some dramatic stakes to the story overall. But it's just the way they were handling it, and especially in the resolution, it was just like, you don't sound like teenagers now. You sound like 20-somethings delivering dialogue. Because it's admirable that there was an 18-year-old in this world that worked to not just get into college, but also to ask that school to help get his. And it may have happened that way. I don't know, but it did just seem like this doesn't seem within the scope of an actual reality, but in a movie reality, it did.
Right.
So. No, I get where you're coming from on that.
Yeah.
It honestly didn't bother me, but
I'm not saying that it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying it's the no teenager thinks like this moment. It's the one moment where I call shenanigans on what they did. All right, Sammy, you got anything you didn't like about this movie that you picked?
No, I don't really think so. I mean, I can't really pick it apart. There's not a whole lot. I mean, maybe there's minor things here or there, but there's not really anything I would change about it.
All right, I guess, is it time for me to ask the big question?
It is.
All right, Joseph, Sammy. Was Coach Carter a slam dunk or not?
Oh, my God.
Yes, I've been waiting to say that for a week. Joseph.
Yeah, I survived it. Like I said, really bad to say about this movie. I thought it was really well acted, and it's a really good feel-good movie. It's one of those. It does have some stereotypes in it and has some cliches, but, again, how many times can you reinvent the sports movie? You know what I mean? Not great.
I'm sure there's a way, but you start getting into.
Well, you get into Any Given Sunday territory where on cocaine the whole time.
Well, I was thinking that you're starting to get into People versus O.J. Simpson because still technically about sports. But...
I wasn't going to that. I didn't know you were going to go that far.
Well, that's the only way I can think of reinventing, because even still, Any Given Sunday falls into the, is this Rocky or Rocky 2?
That's true. Just with a lot of cocaine.
A lot of cocaine and some sci-fi channel level special effects, but none of those were in this movie.
No.
You want me to go next, or you want to go next, Sammy?
I'll go next really quick, because it's not, obviously going to be a surprise. Yeah, I definitely survived. This is one of those movies that would just, fall on my top 100. Mm-hmm. Not because I think it's, one of the greatest films, ever made. It's a standard film. Joseph's right. There's a lot of cliches. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think some of these things that they just work. And if you do, this is just an example of they did it right. They leaned into the cliches in the ways that worked, and they made some good creative choices. This to me is one of those comfort films. I can literally just turn it on anytime, anywhere in the film, and finish watching it.
All right. So me. All right. I'm going to start with my answer of yes, I survived it. I like this movie. I'm glad I saw it. There are many, many things that I like. This is not going to be a comfort movie for me. I don't see myself revisiting this movie ever, or if I do, not as often. Just because, if I want to watch a sports movie, there's at least a good 10 to 15 others I would rather watch than this. I'm not saying this is a bad movie. I actually like this movie. It's just, I don't see myself coming back, but, you never know. Sometimes you just randomly throw something on. And there has been a lot this week. I watched Black Rain last night for some goddamn reason. And then woke up validated that other people were like, yeah, this movie wasn't that good. It's like, okay. I was worried I didn't like, you know, some sacred, you know, cow of cinema. But, so yeah, I liked it. And I'm glad you put it on the list for us to watch, because otherwise I never would have watched this movie. I'm like Black Rain.
And hence the actual point of our podcast, I think.
Yeah. Pretty much. Well, we're going to put Surviving Sports Flicks to bed next week. And next week we're going back to rom-coms. And we're getting downright presidential. And it's my week. And as much as I would love to torture y'all, I got to bring back our boy, Aaron Sorkin. And we are going to be talking about his third feature film as a screenwriter, The American President, starring Michael Douglas, who was in Black Rain last night. But it's a very scandalous picture. It's about what would happen if the president fell in love. I'm sure we have that scandal a lot. It's just this time it's, you know, it feels like it should be appropriate.
Well, this time it's a wholesome movie, not like what did he do?
It's also a test run for this little show called The West Wing, because there is some dialogue in this movie that was later used in The West Wing. So
stay tuned to find out how many minutes of that episode Sammy and John spend talking about Aaron Sorkin versus how much we spend talking about the film.
I was going to say, how long are we going to spend quoting the episode? And I was like, well, the movie's only 126 minutes, so take off like a good 7 for opening and closing credits. It's going to be like a 3-hour episode next week somehow.
Stay tuned for next week's episode, where the entire episode is best line.
Yeah. There's going to be a good 10 minutes of The American President starring, because there's a lot of people in this movie.
Well, there's also going to be a good episode of where he just talks about West Wing. It's going to segue into West Wing a lot.
I think this is an extension of the Sorkin conversation.
It's going to become a game for this episode.
Yeah. This is the movie that bridges the gap between Sports Night and West Wing, because not only does it have President Bartlett in it, but it has Josh Molina from Sports Night.
I do like him in this movie, and in.
Well, that's next week, because we're starting to do the episode. Also, Josh Molina's in A Few Good Men, but for like a scene. Anyway, moving on. So, does anybody have anything else? Have anything they want to shout out this week?
Started watching Star Trek: Strange New Worlds. That's great. I love that.
Yeah, I saw the pilot episode. I need to go back and watch some more before my Paramount Plus runs out, because I don't watch it enough to justify keeping it.
Yeah, when you messaged me and said, hey, that actually, it turned out really good, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Because I was not a huge fan of Discovery, and I started watching, and I was like, this is what I wanted.
Yeah. If it does feel, and I'm basing this on the one episode I watched, it felt like a true bridging of the gap, like a marriage of old Trek and the new style.
And it is, and I quite like that. Like, I have no problem trying new things, but I still want it to be that whole thing of exploring new worlds and finding and solving problems, not like, oh, well, everybody's going to die if we don't save everybody from this huge catastrophic.
Well, and I feel like it's going to have a little bit of that DS9 thing that was happening of, there is an ongoing story, but every episode we're going to have a fucking problem of the week.
Yeah, and that's what I like. Because that's what the whole show is about. It's trying to figure out things and solve problems and just understanding new things that come across their way.
Is that going to be the new trend in TV? The return of the monster of the week?
It probably
would be kind of cool.
Everything comes back to it, because that's what I remember back in the day. That's what everybody bitched about. Now everybody's like, I miss those days.
Yeah. You know, back when if you missed a week in TV, it wasn't catastrophic.
I was like, what's going on? It doesn't matter. It's a new episode.
Yeah. I have a shout out and an opposite of a shout out. Which one do you want, which do y'all want first?
Give us the bad first.
All right, yeah, I'm gonna give you the bad first. All right, so Zac Efron let me down. I watched the new Firestarter, and oh my god, what a drab, boring piece of shit that movie was. It's so stupid. It's a movie that both doesn't try hard enough and simultaneously is trying too hard at the same time. And I'm glad I could watch it streaming instead of wasting money on a ticket.
And see, and I was worried about it because it's one of the, I have not seen anything on this movie, which is a bad sign.
Yeah, it turned out to be a real bad sign.
Like they're hiding it. It's like, hey, we're just going to dump it and hopefully people don't realize it.
Yeah. It, and here's the weird thing. Like, even though it did get a theatrical release, it feels like just a slight step up from a TV movie.
Ooh.
Like they had just enough money for this to not be Sci-Fi Channel level, you know, in terms of, like, it's a great looking film. And of course, the music's great because John Carpenter and his sons did the score, which John was supposed to do the first adaptation of Firestarter. And I think he did The Thing instead.
No, I think he did do, well, I don't know. No, he did not do
Firestarter. No, he did not do Firestarter. Because I feel like had he done Firestarter, any version of it, it would have been better than what I watched. I watched both in the span of a week and hated them both. So
it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Watch it again. Tell me how you, what you think.
I'll do. But it's one of those, like, oh, but you know what's funny when you said Sci-Fi Channel? They did make a sequel to
Sci-Fi Channel. Oh, I know.
And it was a Sci-Fi Channel movie.
Yeah. Starring Malcolm McDowell and Dennis Hopper.
It wasn't good.
I'm not going to mention the podcast, but Joseph knows which one I'm talking about, but they did a retrospective of Firestarter, and I'm getting ready for their new Firestarter episodes. So I went back and listened to both of them, and God, Rekindled just sounds like a waste of time.
Oh, it was.
And it's 3 hours.
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Because it was a two-night premiere.
Oh.
But on the good side, we got a couple of great new albums this week and a couple of cool singles I want to give a shout-out to. First, we got our first new My Chemical Romance song since 2014. That happened the night before we got the new Kendrick Lamar album and the new Florence the Machine album and the new single from our friend Fritz Hager. So it was a busy weekend for John. The new Kendrick, I absolutely love it. I do feel like I still have not listened to it enough to unpack all of it. There are a lot of layers. It's not his best. I currently put it just behind, I put it in the third position behind To Pimp a Butterfly and Good Kid, Mad City. It's definitely not... And I made the big point about it's not about radio singles, and then he went and made N95 a single. I'm like, well, thanks, Kendrick. But some great features on it, including Beth from Portishead. I like how he occasionally just gets the oddball, like you don't expect guest on there. And there's at least one song that's incredibly uncomfortable, and I think I texted you and our friend Zane about it, you know, before midnight as I'm listening to it for the first time.
Yeah, is it the argument?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a song, but it's really well done.
Yep, but I liked it. And also, Florence and the Machine dropped a new album, Dance Fever. If you like Florence and the Machine, you're gonna love it. I believe I described it as a new collection of songs to one day be used as to promote 2 years worth of HBO original series. Like I was closing my eyes and would see Game of Thrones playing. So I was listening, and of course, our friend Fritz Hager dropped a new single, "Hearts Align," which was something they were doing leading into the penultimate episode of this season of American Idol. Sadly, Fritz did not make it to the top 3, but he's got a big career heading ahead of him, and his cover of Youngblood just proved it. And I suck at predictions, but I'm just hoping sometime in the next 5 years he's opening for Katy Perry, because I think Katy loves him the way we love him around here. Sammy, do you have anything you want to shout out?
I do not.
All right. Well, listeners, thank you for putting up with us for another week. And hopefully this episode will be coming out in a reasonable time frame. But and hopefully I'll have a new computer soon. Well, a new old computer, but one that's, you know, got actual ability to do things. And Joseph, Sammy, thank you for doing this with me. And listeners, I just have one more question. What's your greatest fear?
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by The Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
I'll do push-ups for him. You said we're a team. One person struggles and we all struggle. One player triumphs, we all triumph, right?